I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
More LMDs, Coulson's back, and Chromacons are not bored. We all feel like Coulson. That's what I thought. 2 years and 2 seconds. It's like the worst episode of This Is Your Life ever. It is not easy catching up. I shouldn't be here. Can we get a Snyder cut of this? We're talking Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 1, The New Deal. And by we, I mean the three who are also on the panel. Let's start all the way over there with Rachel Radner. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, everyone. Yeah, Rachel Radner, a.k.a. Rachel Goodman, both names, wherever you want to find me. I am very excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about Fitzsimmons, as always. But, you know, like Tehran, you said in our 60-second recap, I'm also really sad that we only have 12 more episodes after this and it's done. I will be crying probably because this show is one of my favorites.
And also because you're a crier. Let's talk to our boy Christian with the new hair. Christian, welcome back.
Happy to be here. Excited to be able to talk about the final season, but like Rachel said, I'm not going to cry about it, but I am upset that it is the final season. The fact that, like you said, we only have 12 more episodes, it's not enough. I think we need 8 seasons in a movie, but nobody asked me.
I completely understand. Christian's not willing to cry. Toxic masculinity at its best. And now we have our newcomer, Katie Kawamoto. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel. I've just been a huge fan of the show. Went to see a pilot episode at Comic-Con when it first came out. So I am stoked, y'all, to talk about it. But I'm a little sad, too, just like all of you.
Well, something tells me we're going to be a huge fan of you. And of course, my favorite person, Ryan, holding it down in the back. Ryan, how are you?
Oh, my God, you guys.
Thank you, Ryan, for speaking. We're going to end that right there. My name's Tehran. If you don't know me, you don't know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to be breaking down this last season's episode. First premiere episode is thus Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 1, The New Deal. We're going to break it down. Of course, we have to talk time travel. That's one of our favorite topics to talk about. Seems to come up a lot on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to talk about 1931, the year. Coulson, Chromacons. You got the Chromacons in this one. Enoch, our favorite Chromacon of them all. Swordfish, and I'm not talking about the horrible Travolta movie. Koenig, we get a Koenig in this episode, so we got to talk that. The mission itself, FDR, Freddy, and of course, save Hydra. We're going to talk about Yo-Yo getting a hand, Quake and Coulson, that matchup, team up, and of course, talk Agent May. Mother, may I? Oh, we have a special segment, Agents of Should, where we take a part of the episode and discuss what someone should or should not have done. News and gossip. Rachel's got some goodies you're going to want to stick around for. And of course, the crystal ball for predictions. Let's talk about our overall thoughts. I want to know what everyone's overall thought is, and I'm going to start with newcomers first. Katie, what were your overall thoughts on this week's episode?
I absolutely loved how they just jumped right in from where last season came off, and it felt natural, even though it jumped majorly back in time. But I was so on board with it. I love the style of the 30s and 40s. It's actually one of my favorite eras. It also gave me that Agent Carter vibe, so I'm living for it. And my girl, Daisy, she just continues to kick ass, so.
Okay, well, let's get this straight. She's not your girl. If anything, she's girl, Daisy, and she happens to be my girl, so we're not going to have to fight over this. The last person who said, my girl, Daisy, we had to fight to the death. So we know how this goes. The crew, you're new, so we're going to give you a pass. Christian, what were your overall thoughts?
Well, I'd also like to say that I'm pretty sure that in Deke's mind, she's his girl. So you might have to fight Deke, although I'm not going to put my money on Deke for that one. It was, first of all, just excited to have the show back, just that in general. But within the first couple minutes, there are all these reminders of why I like the show so much, because there's the light comedic moments, but they also address the reality that they're in 1931, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later. And just little touches like the fact that they have FDR in this episode. And I think that they did a great job casting that actor. But just basically the whole gang being back together, although we didn't see Fitz and we didn't really see May until that last shot at the end. But just so excited to see everybody. And I'm really intrigued to see where they go. You know, I don't love the idea they're in 1931. I would really like them to be in the Agent Carter era because I want to see Peggy, but I really am interested in seeing where they go with this.
I'm interested as well. We're going to find out what is going on. Rachel, what were your thoughts?
I'm all with you guys. I want to see this go to the 1940s or maybe late 1930s. I do have a feeling that's where they're going based on what was leaked on Instagram, you know, a year ago when they finished filming. I'm assuming we're going to get that Agent Carter crossover we've all been dreaming of. But until then, my overall thought of this episode, I loved being in 1931. I loved even the opening title sequence being in a more, time appropriate.
It was like the Invisible Man font, you know, the original Invisible Man movie. It's sort
yes,
of a
Christian,
very nice.
We're not all old enough to remember the original Invisible Man.
It was Rachel, in 1931.
And that's when you were 12. I get it.
So yeah.
I used to babysit FDR.
But in any case, just overall, I did not like that we didn't have Fitz, but I understand we're going to get him, and I understand the reasoning behind it, and I'm sure that this will not be a separation that's prolonged.
Is it me, or do we just not get Fitz in the first episodes of any season? I feel like
never.
Fitz always has to show up later. I don't know how his contract's working, but hopefully it works for all of us. As far as the actor who portrayed FDR, I'm going to have to go out on board with Christian and say, not only were they casted, was that person casted perfectly? I'm pretty sure that was FDR. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm like 96% sure the IMDb credit is wrong, and it was FDR. I have to say, we got a lot of Agent Carter vibes. We got some Boardwalk Empire vibes. I got a bunch of Terminator vibes. This episode had it all. It's a great start to what's looking to shape up to a great season. It's just only sad because parting is such sweet sorrow, and we know we will be parting ways this year at the end, as told, and I'm sure is gonna come up in the news and gossip. Instagram leaked it all again. Let's talk about time travel. We get a lot of time travel in this episode. Of course, we go to the year 1931. It feels like so long ago since we saw the last episode because it was a long time ago. So some of us had to catch up. Remember, we had to go through, we have to go back in time, we have to stop the Chromacons, and we get the notion that the time stream idea is that imagine time as a stream where we are sticks thrown into the water. The water, it moves us, it moves around us, but it ends up in the same place. Too many sticks thrown in, and that will create what is called a dam, and that'll change the direction of the water forever, and that's bad. As long as we can avoid what we should be able to splash around a little bit, and it's all good. Ripples, not waves. Also, Deke, let's not file any patents. What are your thoughts on time travel in this episode in general?
So I love the way that Deke explained it, because this is not the first time we have dealt with time, of course. We've had, you know, Fitz's theories versus what actually happened. And we know that time can be changed in this universe. And that's just the way that it works. I also appreciate that even though Fitz was not in the episode, we did get some Fitz information, like the fact that these specific points in history that they're going to are apparently called tides, at least that's how he's labeled them, Fitz. And that it's almost like it's almost like Simmons is not controlling the Zephyr at all. It's on autopilot. And I think that, to me, that actually makes it easier to explain what, like, I understand what's happening more based on that explanation than if they were to try and somehow explain it in a more convoluted manner.
Interesting. Katie looks like she's a time traveler herself. Katie, what are your thoughts on this time travel? And is it feasible the way Deke explained it?
I think with the MCU in general, there's just so many different ways that they've gone about time travel, but they still did a good job at making it their own and having it work with the TV universe and not the movie universe, because it is different than what they did in Endgame. And I think they're doing I'm on board. I haven't had any problems so far with how they've addressed it and it making sense. And the Fitz, you know, Fitzsimmons seemed to have picked up kind of learned from their past mistakes a little bit. So,
well, you never know with this crew. Learning from past mistakes is not their strong suit. Christian, our resident time travel expert, please please illuminate us on these notions, these silly notions of time travel that we have.
Well, look, it was completely different when I traveled back here from the 31st century, but I don't want to bore you with the details. However, in a network TV way, sure, it makes sense. It all works. The interesting thing about time travel, and they address it in Avengers Endgame, and boy, is there some shade being thrown at the time travel in Avengers Endgame in our live chat right now, is that, you know, you can't get mad when somebody else decides to use their own made up science about pretend science, you know, like, oh, Back to the Future was bullshit, you know, like that's the line from the movie. And it's like, yeah, so you can't be like, well, these are the rules of time travel. It's like, well, even though I just said I came from the 31st century, which may or may not be true, it's whatever is going to work for the story. And I like that they took not even a minute and they explained, well, this is how it's going to work for us. This is why the fact that us just being in 1931 doesn't unravel everything. And, you know, to overextend the Back to the Future metaphor, the picture of Michael J. Fox's brother and sister isn't disappearing throughout the course of this episode. So I like the fact that you can go back in time and just don't do anything crazy like assassinate FDR, and everything's going to be okay. So I think they did a good job in explaining it instead of just, you know, being like, don't worry about it. We'll just be careful. I thought it was good to take the minute.
I have to agree. I enjoy the fact that they took those lines. It was short. It was concise and to the point. They used it. And I know that you're from the 31st century, Christian, because it has to be a fact. It's on your LinkedIn. So, you know, if it's on LinkedIn, it's true. 1931 is a very peculiar year to choose. Did you like the way they the show set up 1931?
Well, Christian and I on Marvel Movie News actually discussed this a little bit earlier.
Oh, but, you guys are down talking amongst yourselves. No. Are you just talking amongst yourselves?
No. But see, the point is that we both kind of felt like it seemed a little bit backlotty in terms of, I could feel that this was not actually New York. It did seem like a stage at a lot of a production company. And so I don't know, I appreciated the style of clothing and the mannerisms I thought seemed accurate, but it just felt slightly fake.
Well, a lot of people don't know they actually used the set from Dick Tracy for this episode.
I wish they did, but
yeah, that would have been great. Like, I just started a rumor. That's how fake news gets started. Go and make a meme and make that a fact, because then it's true.
Just start hashtag. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Katie.
I'll say, I get what you're saying, Rachel, but I didn't actually mind it that much. Cause to me, when I was watching it, I kind of wrote down that it gives me that old school, like super cheesy crime drama, the black and white crime dramas. And it kind of felt like that to me. And I kind of love it. I love that kind of style. So it didn't bother me that it felt a little campy.
And also, it's not like the spaceship was real either, Rachel. Okay,
well,
that was also a set.
No, that's the part. That's the part where you're wrong. The spaceship is real. They actually have the spaceship. Yes.
You're correct.
Yeah. We'll cover that in news a little bit later.
Earth was fake. I remember. You're right.
I know the Zephyr is real because they loaned it off of me. So, you know, there it is.
But I mean, Rachel and I had a sort of a similar vibe. It took me out of it a little bit because I wasn't convinced for a second they were in 1931. It didn't feel like they were in New York in 2019 either. You know, it was just like, it didn't feel like they were anywhere. But I think that they did a good job with the speakeasy and where the big dinner was. You know, the interiors, I think, are a lot easier to fake it. But when they were out on the street, that should have been an amazing scene, if for no other reason than the street should have been really crowded and just bumping into tons of people. But you don't want to pay for the extras. You don't want to pay for all that wardrobe they have to wear in, you know, so it's a very practical thing. And it showed a little bit that they were trying to cut some costs in it. And it's almost like they shouldn't have spent as much time out on the street if they weren't going to be able to really show it.
Now, I thought that the set for the fundraising party was very well done. I didn't have any issues there. It's just that when they were on the street, like Christian said, it just felt fake.
Well, there is a Star Trek The Next Generation, since we're throwing out all these TV tropes, a Star Trek The Next Generation hologram, the hollow room, hollow deck feel, the hollow deck feel to it. So I can understand. However, we recognize that they really didn't travel back to 1931, at least in the real world. However, for the suspension of disbelief, we're going to believe they did. And they go back to 1931, which is the fakest part of the show. The realest part is they brought Coulson back. Coulson is now an LMD. We thought you thought you got enough LMDs, and they were like, no, but wait, there's more. Katie, being our newcomer and having the most exposure to LMDs, what are your thoughts on Coulson?
I mean, I'm happy to see Coulson back, but I'm just curious to see what's going to happen because he has a lot of stuff going on in his head, and that's a lot for anything to be able to handle. So I'm intrigued, but I don't necessarily know that it's all going to be a good thing.
Not all be a good thing. Christian, please tell me you think otherwise.
Well, I think that whatever excuse they needed to come up with to make sure that Clark Gregg stayed on the show was worth it. And this was one that kind of made sense that, you know, you have this ability to like, yeah, you know what, his mind is backed up to a couple years ago. I think that there will be problems with it, though, to Katie's point, like least of all, how everybody kind of gets used to having him around. And you have to remember, he's not Coulson, least of all, when May finally gets to interact with him. Last year, she had to deal with a fake Coulson in the way of Sarge. So now she's got another fake Coulson. So, you know, how many fake Coulsons does she have to live through? So,
I mean, that's basically just dating in L.A.
That's true.
I'm really happy that Clark Gregg is back in some capacity. I would not have cared what role they picked for him. The fact that he's back, I'm happy. I do agree with Katie and Christian. There are going to be complications. The most interesting thing to me, though, is that they only had his memory backed up through season 4, which is the framework arc. And that is like the perfect place from a narrative perspective, the perfect place they could have, you know, conveniently only backed his memory up until, because that was like the height of Coulson saying, LMD's bad, no. And here he is an LMD. And it brings into question this idea of consciousness, because LMD Coulson did not realize he was an LMD at first. It took a second.
It actually took 10 seconds, but who's counting?
Okay, well, so, there you go, 10 seconds.
Let's discuss when we're talking about things that are not as they seem. Let's discuss some chromacons. We get a couple chromacons in the picture, some who are bad, some are good. How does everyone feel about chromacons? Are we chromacon phobes or are we chromacon lovers? Or are there good and bad of everything?
Well, I think Enoch proves that we have the good ones. And then you have the ones that you kind of liked seeing Simmons basically, you know, jam the port right in the back of his head. Cause it's like, yeah, that guy's got it coming. I think that as adversaries go, you know, you mentioned this in the intro, there is a very Terminator vibe to it, you know, because of the sort of very deadpan way that they approximate human speech and behavior. But I don't know. I find it hard to believe that they're as tough as they are. You know, that Daisy had so much trouble fighting one of them. You know, I think that that's probably what I don't like about them. It's like, you can tell me that they're super powerful, but let's see it. You know, I mean, that's cool that they steal faces. Actually, it's not cool. But from a visual standpoint and special effects, it is kind of a cool thing that they can do. But, I need to see more. And this is not the first season we've had them. I haven't really been convinced of them as an impressive adversary.
Christian, don't worry. I think your face is safe. I understand your concerns with Chromacon.
This is not my original face. Believe it or not.
I know it's not. It's your third iteration, at least.
I stole this face. Don't look for Nathan Lane. He's got no face anywhere.
Oh, Rachel.
I'm not necessarily, I don't know. I feel like there isn't much more of an arc that we can see with the Chromacons. Obviously, Enoch, there are good Chromacons, bad Chromacons, but with this being the final season, I feel like if we were going to get another couple of seasons, we could see more of this world, see the good versus the bad versus the gray area. But with this, think that it's just the easiest thing to do is to finish out the show. They're just going to have these, you know, Terminator-esque individuals, and that's how we're going to see them. And so am I a fan of the Chromacons? No, generally not, but I am a fan of Enoch, and if he's a Chromacon, so there's that.
Why does it look like you have the most comfortable chair in the universe? Can we discuss that? That should be a topic.
It is really comfortable. I do all my writing here.
I believe that it is. Katie, so we have everyone loves Enoch. People are against the Chromacons. We have Christian saying they're not as superpowered as they seem. We would love to see that. Rachel doesn't like how they're evil. Katie, what do you love and hate about Chromacons?
I think it's more the fact that the reason why, you know, Christian's saying they don't seem strong enough and we don't know whether or not they're good or bad. I think that's kind of what's a little bit endearing, in the sense that kind of more terrifying that you don't know what they're fully capable of and you don't know that they're good or bad, because it's hard to know anything and be able to plan anything or know what they're thinking or any of their game plans. And that's kind of more terrifying to me. So I'm on like the side of, where else is this going to go if it does? Because that could get scary.
This sounds like one big, hey, we need to talk. So let's discuss Enoch. Enoch is clearly the outlier, the one percenter, the quote unquote race traitor, who has gone against his entire species in order to be the salvation of humanity. Enoch is also the comic relief of the show. How do we specifically feel about Enoch? About Enoch's betrayal of Chromacon and Enoch's role in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's start with Rachel and the company.
Yes, why not? So if we go back to season 6, one of the things that was so endearing about Enoch was him trying to be more human. And we saw that in his connection to Fitz. And how even when they were playing poker and, you know, his poker face and what all of his mannerisms and the way that he evolved, I think that's really what won Enoch over for me, and I'm sure many people. And so now, like in this first episode of 7, we only barely got to see him, you know, obviously first episode. I feel like we're going to see him not lose that comic element, but he might, now that he has such a strong place among the team, and now that more people do trust him, I know Simmons had to make a case for him, but they generally are more trusting of him. Bless you.
Sorry, y'all. Sorry.
And I feel like we're not going to lose the comic, you know, energy, but we'll also see him take on more of a leadership role and see ultimately... Wow, that's a nice mask. Ultimately,
I'm sorry. I heard Katie sneeze and cough. I just, you know,
I think she's just allergic to Chromacons. I think.
Yeah.
That's it.
Ultimately, though, I think that we're gonna see Enoch step forward and either make some kind of sacrifice, or even if he doesn't, just be one of the leading forces at the end who help the rest of the team take down the Chromacons.
With having him as the comic relief, I think part of the problem is that Deke is also comic relief. So you shouldn't have multiple sources of comic relief in a show like this. You know, you can do it in Curb Your Enthusiasm, no problem. But I don't know that it necessarily works so well in this show. You know, the him talking too loud because his headphones are on, you feel like that's a gag you pitch in the writer's room. And then they're like, no, let's spend 10 minutes and come up with a better one. You know, if he's going to be funny, let's go with something better than that. So I think that they should play it a little bit more straight. When his best friend Fitz comes back, that's fine. I like that dynamic together. But I feel like he should be a little bit more buttoned down this season because, he's not programmed for the funny as far as I can tell.
Well, it seems I can understand where Christian's coming from. I appreciate Rachel and Katie as well. I like Enoch as the comic relief. And if I am misreading it, I feel like Deke is a little more of the straight edge this season. Sure, they still kind of pick on him a little, but he's given a little bit of bite back in this episode, where we specifically see him even stand up to Daisy, when Daisy's like, how long is this going to take? He's like, well, I'm just, you know, resequencing the DNA and doing all this stuff, how long do you think it should take? Like, there's a little more backbone to Deke. I don't know what exactly they're setting that up for, but I'm sure it's going to be something that we as the audience are going to truly appreciate and see. At least Deke is the hero I've always seen him for, as the underappreciated hero, the unsung hero of the crew. I've always had a special place for Deke. Maybe it's a little bit of backbone. Daisy will notice Deke and then go out with me. Let's talk swordfish. We get these bottles of whiskey. They've got a swordfish on them. Coulson recognizes from his database that this is in relations to a speakeasy that we go to. Knock, 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 swordfish. Who goes in first? Katie.
Wait, so who goes into the speakeasy first? Is that what
you're asking? No. It was a metaphorical who goes
in
first.
I was like,
we want you to talk about swordfish and going into the speakeasy.
Gotcha. Because I was confused by that.
You were busy coughing and
it kinda threw me off a little bit.
I understand.
So you're
Let's go with Rachel.
Thank you. Sorry, y'all.
First of all, I just want to say swordfish, it was a nod to a historical, it was a nod to the Marx Brothers. It first appeared as a password in one of their films from 1932. So it was an actual Easter egg reference. I just want to say that first and foremost. So I really appreciated that was the password, not just because I'm related to the Marx Brothers either. But that being said, I think that this is where LMD Coulson, not only is it great to have Coulson back, but also we needed the information, we needed the ability to get information easily in this world to give to these characters. And so he kind of serves as the exposition as well. And I definitely think that we needed that character, especially given that Enoch, who might not necessarily know the answer anyway, would not really be around them because he was preoccupied doing other tasks.
I like that, Rachel Christian.
I knew I always got a Zeppo vibe from you, Rachel, and finally for the first time in my life it makes sense. But I don't know. It annoyed me because it's so overly convenient. Like, oh, this really convoluted reason? Yeah, I remember what swordfish is. I was like, all right, it's a TV show. It's 42 minutes. I guess you have to take these leaps. And you do want to justify why they turn him into an LMD. But I was like, really? Like, he's got that in his head? Yeah, well, you know, I remember this during Prohibition. Like, that? You remember that? So, actually, when he said that...
He is an LMD, Christian. He is an LMD.
Oh, I know. Believe me. But, I'm not as endeared with the whole LMD thing as Rachel is. So, but I do love having him. And it just felt like lazy writing to me. It's you know, my complaints about the episode are all from a production and behind the scenes standpoint. What we got on the screen was good, but these are minor gripes. I did love getting into the speakeasy and who we meet in there and all that. I think that it was overly convenient for my tastes.
Katie, welcome back to the show. So, we're going to talk about some swordfish and going into the speakeasy. What were your thoughts on swordfish and going into the speakeasy? Not that you're going in the speakeasy, just the speakeasy in general.
I thought it was, I like a good scene. I'm just obsessed with this era in general. So when I see a speakeasy, I'm really excited about it. I actually got to go to a speakeasy themed thing last year too. So I thought it was fun. It did feel a little bit like they added a lot of stuff into that whole, kind of what Christian was saying, felt like there was a little bit of stuff that you felt like they added a little bit unnecessary stuff in there, that there was just too much and they should have toned in a little bit more maybe, so you could have focused on other parts of the plot. So.
Well, this is where we get a little bit of historical feel to the 1931 era. We've gotten Mac adjusting to the racial tension at a certain time. We've gotten Daisy coming up with the misogynistic undertones, which have not gone away in the modern day. And of course, neither has the racial tension, to the point where our favorite character who's introduced, Koenig, quickly becomes a least favorite character by using the term shadow in reference to Mac and of course being African-American. These terms and this feel of 1931 How did each one of you feel affected by it?
Well, as a white man, I feel like I should go first.
Yes, for sure. I was suggesting the same. Yes.
No.
Can you please mansplain this while you're at it?
Ladies, we'll click off your cameras right now. The men are going to talk about this.
Tell us how the women feel.
We should go talk to our husbands, right?
Yeah, well, Hubby Joe's in the chat, actually, Rachel, so you can talk to him. I think it was important to address it, and I think that they did a good job not hitting us over the head with it, but if they ignored it, it would have felt really disingenuous. I loved the interaction that Daisy had with that cop, where he's like, shouldn't you be off finding a husband? As terrible as that was, I find it completely believable. And I did like that, you know, Mac knew. He even said, ripples, not waves. He knew. He's like, I can't make a big deal about this, you know. And even with George, the bartender, that was his name, right? Was it George? Freddie, the bartender, because it was like FDR. Yeah. It's a major plot point. I forgot. Freddie, the bartender, even that, he kind of was a little bit more outspoken than he ought to have been in 1931, trying to, you know, talk about future things and all that. But I think that actually addressing it and having these interactions, and yeah, we are definitely sitting there, I hate Patton Oswalt, which hurts because usually I love him in my real life.
Exactly. Katie.
I actually did write down the thought, like when she said the whole that husband comment, and part of me as a person alive in 2020, I was like, yes, girl. But then I was thinking, if they're trying to keep the persona that they actually live in 1931, that was not a good thing necessarily to say. It was very not on par with the time. But at the same time, of course, I do like that they took that moment to have her be who she normally is, but it was like a 50-50.
Susan B. Anthony would disagree with you. Rachel.
My comment to that, Katie, I completely understand where you're coming from, but if we look at Agent Carter and that entire show, both seasons, Peggy Carter was not, she went against the grain, and I get what you're saying, but I also don't think it's a problem that Daisy reacted that way. I'm glad she did. And I mean, obviously, like, I don't think that it blew her cover either. Because there were people that did not, you know, like, there were people that didn't just go with the grain of society either. Mm-hmm. My thought, though, is that how they handled the racial issues, I thought that they incorporated it just enough. It wasn't, if they had not shown anything, that would have not done the time period just, considering that's an unfortunate part of history and we need to see that, especially now with everything going on. So I felt like it was a very important element that they included. But if it's like with anything else, if you include too much of anything, it becomes preachy. And so I feel like they like wrote it in very, very carefully, and it was handled in a very sensitive and delicate manner.
I agree. I thought they handled it very well. It was something I will admit that I was looking for. I would have been remiss if they had not touched upon the misogyny, the racial prejudice of the times, and they did in both accord. Of course, we all know that there was much more, but they did it in a very delicate, sensitive, and articulate way. And so I appreciate that. Someone who wasn't delicate, articulate, or maybe even appreciated, Koenig. Our man Patton Oswalt makes a return as Ernest Hazard Koenig, and yet comes off a little gruff and huff and rough and tough with no Afro puff. Thoughts on that? we're gonna start again with Katie, this time hoping she knows what we're talking about.
I mean, I was really happy to see Patton Oswalt again, and then afterwards I was just like, all right.
Yeah, I unfollowed him on Twitter after this episode. Because
that just means he's a good actor. That means he's a good actor.
Yeah. This is going to sound... So first of all, I was glad to see Patton again. I was also... I couldn't stop from thinking about his personal life, and I know he lost his wife, and so I almost kind of saw that in his performance, too. I just wanted to say that. But also, on top of that, it just goes to show that even if you're biologically related to somebody, it does not mean that you have the same values or the same personality.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience, Rachel.
I am.
I would hate to meet your parents. So my thing is, I actually really like Koenig. I like this new rough, gruff Patton Oswalt. I liked having a Koenig. I liked the character so much because there is a likability and charm to everything that Patton Oswalt does. I even liked the trope of using the speakeasy and him specifically as the quick fix to all pieces of information. They make their way to the FDR celebration and we get the actual mission. We're wondering what the Chromacon mission is. We've kidnapped a Chromacon in a spaceship right now. We're getting information. This new Gemma, who is hardcore and tough, extracts this information the hard way. And we think FDR, I want to know what you all think about FDR, and the fact that now we're turning to Freddy. Save Hydra.
Can I just say really fast, what I found interesting about Simmons, since you mentioned her, is that we don't know specifically how long she's been doing this. When Daisy asked, she just said too long. So yes. One, I thought that was a very interesting way to answer that question. But two, in terms of FDR and this ending that we get with Freddy, I just kind of figured there was some kind of like subterfuge involved in this because it seemed too convenient that they would have figured it out that early with FDR. Though I do understand why they got to that thought, but the fact that we had this twist, I think it was interesting, and I think that it made sense. But I am also slightly annoyed that they were somehow, that it was Freddy versus FDR and that the miscommunication was how the Chromacon was saying it versus how he wasn't saying it. Because they didn't, I was a little bit, wasn't a huge fan of that aspect of it.
But I did like the fact that she set the server to continuously generate junk data. In the end, Chromacon is nothing but hardware and software with limited bandwidth.
Not that part. I didn't care about that. I liked seeing this new Simmons, but the actual plot point itself that, suddenly he's saying Freddy instead of FDR. And that was the trick all along. That I was kind of like, all right. But I did.
You guys tried to write an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Please, Christian, yes.
I would love to.
That was the M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end. Like, no, it wasn't FDR.
What's actually funny about that is a lot of people don't know that actually this whole season's going to end and it's going to turn out that Bruce Willis is a Chromacon. So it's actually so amazing that you brought that up. We were going to talk about that in news and gossip, but I guess we jumped ahead. Christian, what are your thoughts on the concept of getting to Freddy, saving Hydra, FDR, and of course having our Chromacon buddy tied up? It's all part of the same plot line.
Right. And I think that, look, anybody who saw the commercial for the season knows this idea that they do need to save Hydra to save S.H.I.E.L.D. I find it very intriguing because obviously it's like, well, if you go back in time, think about if we could stop Hydra back then, but you can't because you're going to need to have S.H.I.E.L.D. and that is therefore the greater good. So I love that little bit of conflict that I think we're going to have throughout the season. And I think it's interesting. I didn't love the fact that there's no need to try and assassinate the future president at this party. I know that they wanted to surprise us, but it's like, yeah, that would probably have an impact though. If your goal is to time stream be damned and make sure that S.H.I.E.L.D. is informed, why don't you go after Freddy and kill FDR? You know, so it's like, why don't you just blow up the whole room if that's really what your goal is? You know, I think that I'm very interested in seeing more of this story, you know, the little green vials and all of that. So I'm very intrigued by it. But I'm with Gemma. I got no love for the Chromacons. I like seeing his face melt.
Well, it's the exact thread to pull at the exact moment to unravel S.H.I.E.L.D., Katie.
I mean, I like where it's going. It's a lot, though. It's for sure going to take, I think, a lot of splitting the story up, so you're seeing one story go on one episode and then you'll go back to where they are, because it's too much to put all that information all in one episode. But the whole just fact about them having to basically save Hydra, that was not something I possibly saw coming, so I was very shocked by that. And I did like that moment, that we're really going full circle. We're taking it back to where the show started when it's ending. And I like that symmetry when they do symmetry like that.
So. When they bookend, it's always great. Clearly, Katie never watched a single trailer, but for all the people who have that in their back of their mind that they're going to go back in time and kill Hitler, just know we will need hate in order to have love. Oh, how precious is that? Let's discuss.
That was very Radio Raheem of you. I love that.
I appreciate you, Christian. Quick tidbits. Yo-Yo getting her hands. Quake and Coulson's relationships. Touch on any one of those that stood out to you. Not all at once, guys.
You said Coulson and whose relationship?
Coulson and Quake. Quake had that tender moment. Clearly, they've had a father-daughter relationship thus far, and so you felt that tension, that awkwardness, and of course, it culminates into a nice moment between the two. And of course, Yo-Yo's hands. None of these are specifically important, but they're great subplots that played out through Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and are now being pulled as threads as well.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rachel.
So the whole thing with Daisy and Coulson is that we finally get the closure that she's sort of been looking for. And even though this isn't real Coulson, he might as well be real Coulson because he has the memories. He's in the body, well, not an actual organic body, I guess, but he's embodying Coulson. And so whether or not this is the original Coulson for Daisy, this is a way for her to get closure and to finally, you know, get past this idea that, well, not get past it because she'll never get past losing the man who was like a father to her, but be able to move forward and heal from it, even if this is no longer the real original Coulson.
Katie?
Yeah, I was going to echo kind of off of that in the sense that I felt like it showed, you know, we saw her pushing it away all last season and then finally opening up to this point where she has this moment with him again, and you're getting that sense of the theme of moving on, which is a little bit sad because the show literally is ending. So it's not just for the characters, it's also for the fans and having to come to terms with the fact that we're going to need closure too.
Christian.
Well, I think that it's important to, you know, I think the idea that Gemma put out there that, you know, Yo-Yo can't be walking around with these metal arms, you know, and I think it kind of forces her to deal with this, you know, when was the last time you felt what anything touched like? So I think it's going to make, you know, look, we've unfortunately had to deal with her with the metal arms already. So I like the idea that they're going to have her make a completely different kind of adjustment out of necessity. So I think that that's going to be a really interesting, you know, an interesting road to go down. But ultimately, you know, as long as Yo-Yo and Mac end up back together, then that's going to be fine.
And of course, we end with Feral May. Just how, Enoch, you only had one job. And Enoch, of course, messed it up. We get this Feral May in the corner, and we left off the episode right there, giving us this exciting premiere episode of Season 7, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The New Deal. Let's play our special segment game, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I want each of you to think of a scene in which you feel an agent should have done something other than what they did. Katie, what are your thoughts?
I think that, I'm totally blanking on his name right now, the Chromacon guy.
Enoch.
Should probably have done a better job watching her.
Yeah.
Good call. Christian?
I think that the chauvinistic interaction with the policeman, obviously Daisy couldn't punch him in the face, but she could have done like a little mini quake, maybe, you know, something that made him quake down below the belt and make his pants messy. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that she should have done something a little bit more than just give him some sass talk.
He was misogynistic, so she should have given him an orgasm. Smart, Christian. I see what
Exactly what I was going for.
I see what you're going there. Great. Thank you so much for that enlightening opinion.
I think he should be repaid for paying her such a high compliment. Thank you, Tehran.
Rachel.
This could be because I'm the viewer and not actually the the character experiencing this, but when the cop was telling Daisy that he wanted her to go around the back and help him with something, I was like, come on, Daisy, like, please don't do that. You should, like, I almost felt like she should know that this was going to be a bad idea. Now, I know she's not clairvoyant, but still, I just felt like there should have been some kind of like spidey sense with her knowing this is not a good idea.
You're right, Rachel. We knew that was a Chromacon. How could she not?
Well, no, not that he was a Chromacon, but that it was just, you know,
it was a bad idea.
Danger. Yeah, exactly.
I think the Quake agent should have moment was, I'm going to go with Quake. First of all, she should have dated me. But secondly, I feel like Quake should have used her powers a little more efficiently when she was fighting the Chromacons at the FDR party. You are Quake. Let's Quake some stuff. Let's get into that news and gossip that Rachel's been sitting on this whole episode.
Oh, absolutely. So I have two things. The first thing is there's an article on Deadline. It's basically with the showrunner and co-showrunner discussing all of the bold choices that they made this final season. They didn't get into specifics, but they did say that they had no fear choosing having certain things happen because it is the last season. It's all the interview is with Jeffrey Bell. So if you are interested, you should go over and check it out. They also kind of dive into Hydra a little bit, but again, no specifics. The other piece of news I have is Elizabeth Henstridge and Chloe Bennett, who play Simmons and Daisy respectively. For the release on Wednesday night, they actually took over the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Instagram, and they were on live for a good 45 minutes, and they discussed their favorite scenes that they filmed. They discussed the process. They discussed things they took on set. For example, Liz was saying that she would take her favorite spoons. Apparently they had really funky spoons that she would take. Mm. And then, Chloe was saying she took all the clothes because it was tailor fit to her body. So why wouldn't she? And then the other thing I wanted to mention specifically from this is that they both said they loved filming the Framework and that the Framework episodes were their favorite arc. And I have to agree with them. That is always going to be my favorite of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 4, that second, that final.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Absolutely. So that is the news I have. For more, definitely go to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Instagram account. That live conversation between the two of them is still up.
That's amazing. I'm glad that the live is still up because the police will need that for when they're charging them with felonies for taking so many things from the set, which is clearly illegal. Let's get into some predictions with those crystal balls. Quick one-line predictions from each one of you. I'm going to start with my main man, Christian, who knows all. Christian?
I think that we're not going to get Fitz next week, although I want him soon. But I do think that we're going to get more historical figures in the course of the weeks ahead. That's my prediction. Maybe a boring one.
I like that one a lot, actually. Katie?
So mine is that I think we're going to see somewhat version of a darker May, since she did go through some stuff at the end of last season.
And what gives you that impression?
I know. And then last year, we always have one character who has like this inner battle and has a dark side. And I think it's going to be May this year. And I did want to shout out Pigeon in the it's Pigeon and the Peacock in chat who said they hope they go to Peggy's time and tie up the loose ends of Agent Carter. And I thought that was worth shouting out because that would be pretty cool.
That would be amazing.
Megan? I made a note of something in the chat that I wanted to bring in. Sorry. Michael Cullen in the chat said that he wants to see a 13-year-old Steve Rogers meet Coulson, which I think would be really cool.
Ooh. Yeah. Rachel?
I would love them to, one, my prediction is that they are definitely going to end up in Peggy Carter's time. That leak on Instagram with one of the actors from Agent Carter being given a bicycle as a gift, I think that pretty much proves it. So I am really, that's my prediction that that's going to happen. Also, going off of Steve Rogers meeting Coulson, I almost wonder if we're going to, my prediction is we might get a hint of seeing Steve Rogers in the past with Peggy, even if we don't actually see Chris Evans. I almost feel like there might be like a very like, you know, distant viewing of it where it kind of could be anyone and it's a double standing in for Captain America.
That's amazing. We're going to all have to discuss what one quick sentence means. My thing is, I believe that Enoch is going to not be alone and be the only Chromacom that's on the side of humanity by the end of this season. And we'll see how that goes as well. Until then, where can people find you if you want to be found? Rachel.
You can find me on Twitter at Rach Goodman or on my author Instagram account at Rachel Radner Author.
She's one of my favorites, Christian.
I'm also one of my favorites. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And as you mentioned earlier, Rachel, she and I were on Marvel Movie News over on the Popcorn Talk, which is every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. So please join us over there. We only talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a few minutes, but we do talk about it.
That's right. And you can also find Christian blocked on my account. So if you don't know which one he is, just see which one is not on my account. Katie.
I'm Katie. You can follow me on all social media and Twitch at KT_Christine or on the Con Guy Show on Monday nights on Popcorn Talk Network at 9 o'clock.
That's right. Is she Katie? Is she Christine? Is it 9? Is it 10? Find out on her Instagram. And of course, find me at I Am Tehran all across the board. That's IAMTHRAN. And hosting and paneling on a slew of other AfterBuzz after shows, because all of your favorite TV shows are my favorite TV shows too. Until next week, we will be talking more Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We'll see you. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.